You want to recreate all that conversation?
No, not really.
I don't know. Pulling out the little mini keg tap thing, it makes me feel like cleaning Max's penis or something like that. Like, whoa! Oh, I forgot the. I closed the vent and it built up some pressure. I wasn't sure if we were gonna drink any more tonight. So sorry about all the head.
That happens. You know I love it when you give me head.
Do you know? Well, I'm very toothy. I just spilled some beer on my leg. Because it's a mini keg, and we don't have an elevated thing here, I have to pour it off the edge of the desk.
Right.
And I just misplaced the glass briefly and spilled beer down my leg.
Any thoughts for title? No.
Well, summer weed something or summer weed extravaganza.
Okay, so do Jeff a genie do. All right, I sent you the notes.
Thank you, sir. You're a gentleman and a scholar.
Mm. I am both. Okay. Let's see. Oops, that's not the right one. That's not the right window. Memorial Day. What are you doing for Memorial Day?
Not too much. I think my mom's having a cookout going over my parents' house and hanging out. We were thinking about going away camping this weekend. But obviously I'm here right now, so.
So you're not.
We didn't do that, yeah. I wanted those. I mean, it's 3 days. I still got a lot of shit around the house here to do.
Yeah.
Finished up a big portion of the kids, that playhouse out back. Put up a railing on the deck. And I got to make a new door for that. And then nip off some nails on the second floor. And that'll be about done. Yeah, kids are going to paint it on the inside. You goof around whatever they want from there. But then I got to touch up. I got to decide whether I want to save the money and paint the outside of my house myself. Now, granted, it's mostly siding, right? So I just got to paint the trim work.
Right.
Or pay someone close to $1,000 to paint my house for me. I don't like the idea of spending $1,000 for house painting.
I do. If it's me, I'm like, let somebody else do the work. But you are more of a hands-on kind of guy than I am. So
I am, but I don't know. It's going to be, it's a lot of work. It's probably a week's worth of work if I, was doing it full time.
It's probably $1,000 worth of your time work. I mean,
Yeah, but it's not the time where I'm, actually making money. It's time where I, but now that I have kids, I have another consideration, right? It's time. Is it $1,000 of time I'm not spending with my kids? That kind of thing. So,
can you convince your kids to do it? How are they with ladders?
Exactly. use this putty knife and scrape off all the paint chips and then repaint the. That was a good show.
That was a good show. We have some good beers. None of them were very high alcohol, but they were all really tasty. Mm-hmm. And that certainly helps a lot. It's not just alcohol that makes for a good show.
Could you imagine if you could get 6 packs of that Goza?
I can imagine. Yes.
It's just...
The thing is, I don't know how often I would get it, because you and I, we like to explore other beers. So
it could be a go-to. It's like, okay,
it could be a go-to.
Time for old Betty,
That is true. I mean, wow, that was something fantastic. So, did you see that Batman vs. Superman now has a title or a subtitle?
Batman versus Superman?
Yeah.
Why are they fighting?
So, from what's been revealed so far is that they will fight, but then ultimately team up because they were tricked into fighting each other. You know, one of those sorts of things. But it's called Batman.
How does Batman even compete with Superman?
Well, I'll get into that, but okay. The title is Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice. So what
there should be Batman vs. Superman Two Drunk Dicks.
It should be Batman vs. Superman Supreme Court or something like that. Batman vs. Superman Dred Scott, or, you know, or something like that. But okay, because the idea here is to set up the whole Justice League thing, sort of the competition to the Avengers.
I see.
So what is Batman's power, really?
His neat gadgets.
His power is money, right? I mean, he's well fit. He knows lots of, you know, ninja stuff. He is supposed to be the greatest detective in the world, but that never really gets never really gets presented in the movies. But his basic power is money.
But it got presented in the TV show.
It sort of. what's Superman's power? Everything.
Except for kryptonite.
Yeah. That's the thing is, you know, if there's one guy who could manufacture kryptonite, it'd be Batman.
Mm-hmm.
He's smart and rich enough to make it. So there's, I guess, the weakness.
I guess, yeah.
it's still so. I never really liked Superman that much. As a character.
So I'm not sure I ever thought it through, but I guess Iron Man and Batman are
very similar.
It's kind of the same character, huh?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's Tony Stark's power is money and his smarts.
He's a bit of a dick because he's rich. Batman's a bit of a dick because he's rich. Tony Stark's more outgoing than...
Hey, Tony Stark's more personal. Batman is more sort of brooding.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Stark's willing to... Tony Stark's Robert Downey Jr. I mean, he's a... Mm-hmm. It's got charisma.
Right.
Batman is Christian Bale. He doesn't really have a lot of charisma.
He's still Michael Keaton to me, man.
Well, he'll be Ben Affleck in this one.
He's still Michael Keaton to me.
But...
Oh, fun.
But... I'm not interested in the DC side of things. I don't think they've made very good movies. The Superman that they made sucked. The Man of Steel was terrible.
Never watched it.
They're making, you know, they made a Green Lantern with Ryan Reynolds, which was terrible. They plan to make a Wonder Woman movie, and then they plan to make a Justice League movie. So they're gonna.
Well, at least the Wonder Woman movie will have some eye candy, right? Maybe.
Maybe. there's probably more eye candy in Game of Thrones than there would be in any of that stuff. So, just watch Game of Thrones for your tits.
There be tits in Game of Thrones. That's for
there
sure.
Be tits.
What do you think of? The last couple episodes of Orphan Black. I mean, they're good, but I mean, I don't think the season's as good as the first season.
I haven't watched the last episode, week's episode. I haven't seen it yet. You know, they're going a new direction with it, but the interesting thing about the show is that it would be kind of, if Tatiana Maslany wasn't in it and wasn't doing such an amazing job, it would not really be that interesting of a show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's an aspect. There's 15% or so, which is like just watching the actress play different characters, right? That's about 15% of your enjoyability. You know, and this season they introduced, one new character, I guess? I'm trying to think. I don't think there's another one.
Just Rachel, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so they introduced one new character this season. I thought once they introduced Rachel, there was going to be a few more but not yet.
Well, no, they introduced the one who died of lung cancer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the American.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And, oh, you didn't see the most recent one, so there's a little bit of a reveal. Because, oh, geez, I'm trying to think of... I'm drawing a blank on...
Don't worry about it. Don't talk.
Main character's name.
Sarah.
Sarah, that's it. She's actually... She speaks with... fuck, I can't think of any name. The white-haired doctor guy.
Okay.
And there's a little bit of a reveal about the cloning technology. Research. So
I won't... What it's for, I guess?
No, no. It's not a huge spoiler. You want me to just say it? Or...
Yeah, sure.
It's a... There was a fire in the lab, and like a lot of the research was lost. So the Dyad Institute is kind of trying to recreate it, but they don't have the technology to do the cloning and type stuff because it got lost. So, yeah, the technology that built Sarah got lost.
I see. Interesting.
So it actually changes... I don't know. I mean, there's so much ill will of these bad guys and the man, you know, for, you know, trying to, you know, control these women that it doesn't really does. It can't counter all of that, but I think they're trying to steer Dyad Institute into not such an evil person.
Yeah. They're not strictly speaking the devil.
Yeah.
As opposed to those religious guys who we have no idea what they're doing. And we didn't really know what the project was for in the beginning anyway.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. What else do I have here? You sent me a link to somebody posting about the Stout versus Snifter test.
Oh, it was basically just saying someone actually wrote a review comparing the Stout glass against the Tulip.
Yeah.
And I think we probably should start calling this Tulip. I think Tulip's more... Or do you think it's... I don't think it's Snifter.
I mean...
Snulip?
Snulip. The Snulip glass.
which is great. And he loved the Stout glass. He thought it was... It significantly improved Stouts over this glass.
Mm-hmm.
The main reason I sent it to you is because we had talked about the Savor Salon. About
right,
the glass.
Right.
And both the IPA glass and the Stout glass were being compared against the straight-sided Shaker Pint. Duh. Of course it's going to be much better.
He said something in his review that was interesting. He said he said that there was a definite difference, and he gave it to his wife, and his wife was like, is this the same beer?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, that's a strong reaction for what we would assume would be a pretty minor change. The only thing that came to mind... If the glassware is not what's causing it, you know, maybe it's true. Maybe the glassware does make it better. Would be by holding the stout glass, you might warm the beer up more and make it more, you know, bring out more flavor.
Yeah. That's a good point. He wrote a stellar review for the thing.
Yeah.
And I think we need to do a similar and see if we notice that much difference. I've been drinking from the IPA glass a lot. I have a lot of IPAs, and you know, I have that IPA case exchange, and I bought that same IPA case. So I've been using the IPA glass, trying to... It's a fine glass, right? I haven't done any side-by-side comparisons with the Snulip... with the Snulip lately. I don't know. I think I need to do them like side-by-side to see if I... actually think that the IPA... I mean, I had a legacy IPA from Saranac last night in the IPA glass, and the IPA glass treated it spectacularly. It was a very tasty beer.
Okay, we haven't done this. We might need to pause for this, but we have not done Amazon Anonymous for 3 weeks.
Oh. Okay. I think we should do Amazon Anonymous. And while we're pausing, I'm going to use the restroom.
By all means.
All right, so we're back. Amazon Anonymous. I'm going to pick the game. I'm going to do Time's Up Title Recall. This is a game that I've not heard of, but it has 37 customer reviews, and it has a 5-star rating. So it's got to be a fun game here. Product description. Welcome to Time's Up. With the whole new look of our smash hit game, instead of famous people, we crammed over 800 famous things into this game. Guest titles of famous books, songs, movies, TV shows, and lots more. New for this edition are expanded rules to allow the odd number of players, 3, 5, or 7. Ooh. Even more exciting is the addition of a fourth round, the Freeze Challenge. And, yeah, so it has 33 5-star reviews, 1 4-star, 2 3-stars, and 1 1-star. Oh, I gotta look at the 1-star review. Because I like reviews, Greg hates them. We were really excited to get this game, but when we played it, it wasn't too good. We can use the cards to play charades, but the game itself just wasn't working for us.
Okay.
We gave it a 3 for durability, a 1 for fun, and a 1 for educational.
Okay.
Have you heard of this game at all?
Never.
No.
My pick is the Serengeti Granada 8 Base Comfort Sunglasses. First of all, they're expensive, so thank you, whoever bought them, because it's more money in our pockets. But the second thing is that they're the kind of sunglasses I like. They look cool. They're I don't like huge sunglasses. I like the ones that are kind of, you know, they're small, but they fit over your eyes, and they have that, I don't know, slim look. I like those sunglasses a lot.
Those didn't show up under the orders report, only under the earnings report. Nice.
So, I like those a lot. Those are really cool. Serengeti Granada 8 Base Comfort Sunglasses. 5 stars with 42 customer reviews. So.
Yes, it has 36 5 stars, 4 4 stars, and 2 3 stars. No 2 or 1s.
So, they look cool. I like those sunglasses. I mean, I have sunglasses look just like them, but they're $10 sunglasses, and they're probably not nearly as good.
There's something nice. I mean, before I had kids, I would spend money on Oakleys, and the lenses were really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had kids.
You had kids, and suddenly your money needed to go in other places.
Yeah, exactly. And I lost a pair of Oakleys in the ocean, and that really pissed me off.
Yeah.
So, now I buy the Chibi Chibis, $10.
Yeah, I mean, they do the job. Might as well give me some. I left my thing at home, but I don't feel even a bit, really.
I feel just a bit.
Yeah.
But the same amount as drinking, 8% beer.
Yeah.
So
this is a good show. Okay. So that's Amazon Anonymous. Thank you, everybody. Keep sending in your Amazon Anonymouses.
Stay anonymous, my friends.
Did you see this thing about dogs and morality?
No, I haven't seen this.
Researchers see sort of honesty and deceit and some sort of things that we usually only associate with humans.
Okay.
In interactions between dogs.
Okay.
Cool stuff. There's a whole big article in the Washington Post you can read about it. I don't want to get into it, but when dogs go into that sort of play bow,
mm-hmm.
thing, when they when they want to play and they do the little, mm-hmm. they put their hands down, they do that thing. That they say here that it's kind of an instigation and a clarification, a warning and an apology at the same time. Is how they put it.
That's interesting, because...
I'm going to bite you, but I'm just fooling around type thing.
I always saw it as a... So, when you're playing football,
uh-huh.
what you're trained to do if you're on the defense is when the guy is running toward you with the ball, when he is 5 yards away or so, you break down. And what that means is instead of running, you kind of stop and you kind of squat a little bit like this.
Right.
So you can change direction. So you read him and you figure out what he does and you change direction. Right. So that breakdown is kind of how I always saw the play bow, right? Yeah. They're going down and they're getting ready. They're anticipating what to do next, right? That's how I always, and I'm not a dog psychologist, but that's how I always interpreted what that move was.
But they are saying here that it's as much getting ready for something as it is an expression and communication.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people have always heard, you know, said, oh, look at the way they wag their tail. But they're saying that there's even more body language kind of stuff going on in that. So, yeah, I mean, whenever you see that, you know, the dog just wants to play. And you're just like, and sometimes you're like, good with it. And sometimes you're like, all right, you got to calm down. But you know that a dog that goes like that is never going to be aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to be aggressive in a bad way.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, you never... Dogs don't do that when they're going to be mean to you, right? They take a very different stance. It's a good point. And really... Huh. I don't know. I'm trying to think through, you know... I remember, you know, the only dog I've ever owned is Guinness, a greyhound, right? And, yeah, the play bow thing, like where I would notice him doing it the most was, now it wasn't much of a fetching dog, but there was kind of the, you know, are you going to throw that left or are you going to throw that right? So that's why, maybe that's why I associate the breakdown, right? But, you know, even with its, I don't know, because it's also like, you know, with the dog, you'd have a little stuffed animal and you kind of move it around, he'd bite it, you know, stuff like that, right? But that's kind of, I don't know, I guess dog, I was going to say that's kind of a cat, like a mouser type thing, right? Where a cat, you know, they're pouncing on prey.
Mm-hmm.
Dogs typically don't pounce on prey, but I guess the last moments of the hunt, it's kind of like that, right? When dogs are hunting, right? When they're, I mean... Obviously, they're not going to stand still and pounce on the mouse, right? They're not going to do the mouser type thing.
Yeah, they're not going to do the cat thing where the cat just sort of lays down and just has their eyes, and then you can see their pupils contract.
Yeah. But, I mean, you figure they're chasing... Dogs chase down their prey, and then maybe the last moment right before they make contact, they... kind of get ready to go left or right, you know, trying to anticipate which way the prey is going, right? Maybe that's kind of where I was thinking of it, but I don't know. I've talked about that enough. Let's move on.
Okay. Well, I just think it's interesting that, you know, some people say that humans have morality and that's what separates them from other animals. And I think that, you know, this research shows that other animals certainly have moral landscapes of their own.
So you're saying that because the dog is in a playful mood...
The play thing is just one aspect of this study.
I see. Okay.
But they showed... another example, something that happened in the study, is that two dogs are trained to handshake.
Mm-hmm.
And one is, you know, they're initially trained to handshake both with treats. And then they stop giving treats to one of the dogs in view of the other dog. So the other dog keeps getting treats during handshakes.
Mm-hmm.
The other dog doesn't get treats during handshake. The other dog will stop doing the handshakes because they assume a sort of perceived inequality.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so if he was on his own, he would continue to do handshakes because he's been trained to do handshakes without any kind of reward.
But since he's seen the other
because
dog...
Because he sees the reward, he shuts down faster.
Mm-hmm.
It's
just in one example. There's a lot of stuff.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you'd almost expect dogs to do that, though, right? I mean,
well, would you, I mean, if dogs don't have some sort of sense of inequality, then why would they do that?
It's a, yeah. I don't know if inequality is. I'm trying to figure out if inequality is the right word, because for me, it's more of a my initial thought. Right, my initial thought, what I'm trying to think through right now, is that it is it's food, right? It's not really food.
It's a treat. It's a sugar treat. It's, you know.
Well, sure, but it tastes good. It acts at in the world before humans made yummy dog treats.
Right.
It satisfies the same parts of the brain as getting real food does.
Sure.
Right? So dogs realizing that the other dog is, you know, I just want to change the conversation slightly from getting a reward to improving his survival, right? You know, that kind of thing. I'm trying to figure out if there's something there, but I'm not sure I can really get there, because
it's hard to say. I mean,
because he stops performing, where you would think, if anything, if he keeps performing, he might think he might eventually get the right treat, right? But he gets frustrated.
Frustration is a complex emotion.
Yeah. He's like, well, I guess it is. It's more of a, yeah, damn, it's not fair. He's doing the handshake. Yeah. He gets the treat. I'm doing the handshake. Yeah, that's curious, because, I mean, if you put yourself in the head of a dog, or what you think a dog might do, it could go either way. He could continue to handshake, hoping that maybe the next time he'll get the treat. I can't put myself in the headspace where thinking dog B was trained to handshake without treats, he's going to continue to shake without treats. I don't put myself in that specific headspace. Well, the headspace I can put myself in is either dog B gets frustrated and stops, or dog B is eternally optimistic and thinks maybe the next time I'll get the treat too. And if I was asked which way this experiment would turn out, I would actually pick that one. I would pick that the dog is eternally optimistic and thinks maybe next time I'll get the treat too.
And that apparently is not how it turns
right
out.
Right.
Another thing that they found is canines do role reversal or self-handicap during play. When a big dog played with a smaller one, for example, the big dog often rolled on her back to give the smaller dog an advantage, or she allowed the other dog to jump on her far more often than she jumped on him. That seems to point to almost a theory of mind, almost a concept that the dogs have the idea that these other dogs exist and have their own personalities and things like that.
So here's a question for you, and you could probably shoot it down fairly easy, but it's one that popped into my head, and that is a dog pack in any way like an ant colony, right? Where it's not individuals, but...
No. I mean, not really. Because they're not...
Well, I said in any way, right? So I mean,
and I don't think they are. It's a social grouping. Here's another, I think, another sentence I caught: in the wild, coyotes ostracize pack members who don't play by the rules. Something similar happens in dog parks, that sort of thing. There, it's still a confluence of different individuals as opposed to, you know, I don't care.
That's funny that the coyotes don't play by the rules. Yeah. It makes me think of kids going to kindergarten,
yeah,
you know, like, and having to figure out what the rules are, right? You know,
there's not this idea.
And I guess that's very different than an insect colony, right?
Yeah.
Because they don't have to figure, there aren't individuals figuring out rules.
Right.
They're
an insect colony. An ant doesn't care whether it lives or dies.
Mm-hmm.
It cares. If care is the right word, care is probably not the right word. It has things that it does and things that it's motivated to do, and it simply does them, and goes about doing them without really any, without much in the way. I mean, it gets its communication mostly just from aromas and mm-hmm. signals like that.
So here's a question for an ant expert, which neither of us are.
No.
But are there any, you know, other than the extremely rare mutation, are there ants that are loners, that are rebels, right? That are like the ant from an ant's life.
I'm a loner, Dottie.
From a bug's rebel. Life, you know? where, like, they don't play by the rules, right? Like, you're talking about coyotes that don't play by yeah. the rules. Is there...
Those coyotes get ostracized.
Well, right, but... Other than,
I don't think an ant can survive in the wild.
Well,
ants and bees evolved from wasps, which do.
For sure, but I'm talking about don't play by the rules, right? Like, you know, you got this asshole ant that instead of walking all the way to the end of the pheromone line to get the new leaf, he steals a leaf off someone close to the. You know, I wonder if there's ever a case of an asshole ant.
I bet there are. I mean, there's so many ants, and there's more biomass of ants than there are humans in the world, right? So I'm sure that happens, but if it were
The question is, how frequently does it happen, and what instances does it happen?
Is it a
freak mutation, or is ants, like, you know, something, you know, I don't know, something, is it more common to have these asshole ants?
That's a good question. I did read something about studying fruit flies that have to make decisions based on smells because there's a lot of fruit fly research because they're relatively easy to study and mm-hmm. we've mapped them out pretty well and they have 200 neurons in their brains, roughly, that sort of thing.
Through 1,000 generations a year.
Yeah. So they studied fruit flies that were, you know, made to be one particular smell. They knew it would be rewarded. One another particular smell, they knew it would not be rewarded. And that went fine. But then they studied a fruit fly where the smell was really hard to detect. Mm-hmm. And they found, surprisingly, that the fruit fly, the neurons in the fruit fly became much more active. Suddenly the fruit fly was doing a lot more thinking. The fruit fly was thinking and determining which way to go. So the fruit fly was not behaving just like an automaton.
Mm-hmm.
The fruit fly was making a consideration.
Well, right, because... Well, it's just like tasting beer, right? It's you... If... What I was trying to draw through is if the... The choice is so easy, and there's no consideration. It's automatic. It's a sense you haven't developed, right? It just happens. It always succeeds. You never have to develop. But when it's more, you have to be more critical, right? When it's a more difficult task, there's times you succeed, times you fail. You need to succeed more to thrive, right? So you have to put more.
But that's you and me, and that's things that we and other.
But no, I think it's nature, right? I think
when
making the decision to go to the reward is easy, it is either the skill is either never developed or is atrophied, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where when the decision is difficult, you need to make a better decision with the data you have.
Well,
right?
the point of the research was that people, me included, consider insects to be essentially automatons, essentially robots,
mm-hmm.
That have, you know, that can be programmed in certain ways, but they're not much more complex than that. And this study, if shown to be true, says that there is something more complex going on, even in the brain, even in 200 neurons.
Right. I think it's nature, right? When the, I'm trying to pick the right words here. When the task is more difficult, it's going to devote more energy
mm-hmm.
to successfully deciding that task.
Right.
Right. when the task is easy, like go this way to get reward because mm-hmm. it smells like flowers, and don't go that way because it smells like poop.
Yeah.
Right? Well, for fruit flies, they might like poop too. But you know what I'm saying, right?
Like sugar. Fruit flies, yeah. Particularly fruit flies. Like sugar.
Right. Yeah. So flowers and poop, you know, that kind of thing. It's easy. And if they've never had to really, if it was just so easy that they always just knew which way to go. But when it's difficult, right, then there's going to be a benefit to developing that skill, right, of mm-hmm. determining which way to go. And that's why I was trying to tie it to our palates, right? Because we've worked and we have senses that a lot of people don't have.
Yeah.
Right? In our palate. And these fruit flies have senses that a lot of fruit flies don't have. You know, that kind of thing.
Maybe. Maybe they do. Do fruit flies have some sort of thinking going on? Or are they...
No, I think it's just... It's still an input and an output type thing. So thinking. What is thinking? Thinking is a computation.
Thinking is more than that. Thinking is... What I would consider thinking is not just a computation, but also a consideration of outcomes. So a...
See, I don't know. From the experiment that you've described to me so far, I don't see the need for a consideration of outcomes.
So I don't think so. So that wouldn't be thinking in my definition.
So the fruit flies have improved their decision making. Their algorithm is better.
That's not what was said.
Okay.
That they used more brain power to try to determine when there was when it was harder. It was not said whether they were successful or not. It was only said that they use more brain power than, and it took them longer to make the decision.
Okay, so maybe I'll take back some of what I said. I mean, thinking of outcomes, right? I mean, I'm trying to figure out how I want to say this. What I'm thinking is something along the lines of, there's still a problem. I mean, the decision's hard. Fruit fly calculates which way to go. Of course, they don't understand the probability, but there's got to be some intuit there of this is the way to, I mean, okay, you said they weren't more successful or not, but they did put more thought into it.
Yes.
Well, seems like a missing piece of the puzzle there.
I mean, you know, the fruit fly has been known, that knows that strong odor of one type,
mm-hmm.
it receives reward.
Is it more sampling, trying to decide? I mean, maybe it's just more brain power from more sampling, saying, you know, okay, this way, okay, that way, okay, still this way, okay, that way, you know, maybe it's more... you know, when it's obvious which way to go.
Right.
Okay. Woo, drive, you know, fly 10 feet. Okay. Woo, fly 10 feet. You're there, right? Where if it's hard, maybe they're doing more.
The thing
sampling.
Is, you know, in that case.
That's more brain power.
In that case, yeah, the fly is not just going by the first thing it smells. It's trying to determine which way to go based on the inputs, and it's having a hard time deciding.
It would also be interesting to look at their search patterns for the two different things, yeah. Right? Because, I mean, nature's smart, right? Nature has efficient search patterns often. And it would be interesting to see if they start out with an easy target search pattern, and when they realize that they missed, they move on to a more fine-grained search pattern, you know, where they increase the sampling frequency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of thing. I mean, here's a great analogy. That's like geocaching, right? Or maybe orienteering. Let's say orienteering, right? When you know you're far away from your target, you take some sight lines, you walk to the tree that's over there, right. Take another sight line, walk to the next tree. And you know when you're close to your target, you take much more fine-grained samples of the environment to find the X marks the spot, right? And not a perfect analogy because that's all distance.
Well, how the BBC is putting it is fruit flies dwell on difficult decisions. So they spend more time choosing between a strong and weak smell if the difference is small. They say here, gathering information before committing to a decision is the hallmark of intelligence. If the information is unclear, the choice is trickier, and the decision takes more time. We do it, other primates do it, even rats and mice do it, but now it seems that flies do too.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I see. I would still argue away from intelligence and into mechanical efficiency or something, you know, something along those lines, right?
What's the difference?
I don't know. I don't know if I can really put that into words. I mean, I see your point.
It says, crucially, as the differences became smaller and trickier to distinguish, that flies took more and more time to make the decision, waiting much longer in an intermediate zone between the two odor levels. Suggests that the fly's brain is gradually accumulating evidence until it has enough to make a choice with confidence.
I think you, I don't know. It sounds like some of those terms, some of what you're talking about is kind of anthropomorphizing a fruit fly a little too much, right? I mean, you can have robots.
It says it suggests.
You can have robots do the same thing. Mm-hmm. Right? You can build a robot that does the exact same thing. Is that intelligence?
Yes. No, it's not consciousness, but is it intelligence? Yes.
You set a rule in the algorithm saying, don't make a decision until you have 60 parts per million or something like that, right? Or a ratio of this versus that. And the mechanics of the fruit fly could be that kind of rule, that kind of ratio, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm arguing against intelligence, really.
But the point is that the fly doesn't just come onto the situation, gather that information immediately, and then make his decision.
It takes a while to sample the environment, right? So if the difference is only 5% in between the two aromas, it's going to take a while to sample enough data to figure out.
So there's another process going on there besides just determining on basis of ratios. There's another process saying, wait, this isn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
I need to gather more information. Saying I is the bad term here, but more information must be gathered before a decision is made, and therefore this system will stop.
I'm still pretty firm with this could be explained as a mechanical process. Like, you could build a machine to do the same thing.
I'm sure you could.
And what does nature build? Nature builds machines.
Yes.
So, I don't know. I think we should move on, but I'm not going to... I don't know. I'm just kind of against the... It depends what you define intelligence as, I guess. And typically, from what I'm used to, we don't have intelligent machines. And this sounds like something that machines we have to take it easily, you know, it sounds like the same behavior a machine would have when you program it.
I think we have intelligent machines. I don't think we have conscious machines, but I think we have intelligent machines. That gets back to the hard problem of consciousness, and that's it. And that gets back to something I said in the beginning, where I think consciousness is a series of a whole bunch of different things running at once, and it can't be defined as a single thing. That's why it's a hard problem, because when you try to define it as a single thing, you run out of ways to describe it that don't start interfering with each other.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure I would banter or bandy around about the intelligence, right? I mean, sure, we can build a machine that mimics a fruit fly, right? I mean, either have a program or actually build a robot, and maybe even build a mechanical machine that mimics a fruit fly, you know, at that point.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a fun, difficult task, but it might be possible with our technology today.
Nature's had 4 billion years on us.
But fruit fly's still pretty. You said 200 neurons. I mean,
yeah, but but also making that small and compact, making it being able to get all its energy in the way it does.
Sure. Let's move on. I'm not going to concede this whole intelligence thing. I think it's a fun conversation. I'm obviously not going to sway you. You're not going to sway me here. So
I don't have any other stuff to talk about.
It's been 45 minutes. I think that's enough.
Okay. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week. If the Buddha thing happens, it may be a teletasting. If not, it'll just be a regular show.
Sounds like a plan.